The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We've been discussing the starfish. I hope you find them interesting. I really don't see how people can have much knowledge about them and not find them immensely interesting. And we are discussing them not just from the standpoint of their interest, but from the standpoint of the difficulties that the unusual structures provide for the idea that the echinoderms in general, or the starfish in particular, could have evolved from some kind of a common ancestor. I mentioned in the introduction of the last program about how the starfish feed on clams, and mentioned how they'll crawl up over them, exert pressure. Eventually, the muscles that hold the clamshell shut will weaken, and finally the starfish will simply evert its stomach down into the open shell and digest the clams. One thing I did not mention that occurred to me the solution of the people in the oyster beds, people who were fishing those beds, was very interesting to me. If they were dredging for the oysters, often they would dredge up the starfish, and knowing that the starfish fed on the oysters, the habit of the oyster fishermen initially, they'd simply whip out their pocket knife and cut the starfish into probably 5 pieces and toss them back in the ocean. And what they were doing, rather than killing the starfish, they were simply providing 5 where there had only been 1 before, because of the unbelievable ability of the starfish to regenerate. And if you see many starfish, when we get the specimens that we dissect in invertebrate zoo from the supplier, often you'll find a starfish with 4 large arms and 1 short one. And what this means is that for some reason, somehow, one of the arms was lost, and the shellfish was simply in the process of regenerating that lost structure. I would also observe in passing that this ability is not something which the starfish is going to have the ability to generate on its own, nor is it an ability that is somehow going to be conferred as a consequence of evolutionary changes over millions and billions of years. Now, we were getting ready to talk last time about what is perhaps the most unusual set of structures or most unusual characteristic of the starfish, and this is what is known as a water vascular system. They do not have the equivalent of arms and legs. They don't have the jet propulsion that squid and octopuses do. And much of their movement is due simply to the collective movement of what are known as tube feet. If you ever see a starfish, turn it over, upside down, and under the ambulacra, the arms of the starfish, you will see a groove. And if you look carefully into that groove, you will see some little jelly-like appendages that are there. These are the tube feet. Now, there is an opening in the disc known as the madreporite, and this is the opening that controls the entrance and the exit of the ocean water. There is a canal that runs around the mouth that's there, and branches of tubes that run out to all the tube feet. So when the starfish increases the amount of water in this system, this would mean that the tube feet would swell up and no longer be exerting a vacuum effect on the ends. On the other hand, when the water pressure inside the system is decreased, then the little suction-like structures on the end of the tube feet will have the ability to attach themselves to whatever it is they happen to be standing on. And by controlling this rhythmically, the starfish is able to move along wherever it's going. Simply from a physics standpoint, let alone a functioning view, how does it work? How do all of these little structures function together? And how are they able physiologically to accomplish the task that they do? For people to look at that and study it is difficult enough. But to try and attribute the development of this kind of structure simply to evolutionary processes over long periods of time is just not a reasonable answer at all. This also, by the way, is one of the structures of the starfish that is absolutely essential to the starfish. Without these tube feet, at least in my thinking, it would be very difficult, if not impossible, for the starfish to survive. Its movement from one place to another is dependent on it. Its ability to feed on clams is dependent on it. I keep saying clams. Those are not the only shellfish that starfish feed on, but they certainly do feed on clams. And without that function, there simply would be no possibility of taking in food. So it is probably the characteristic that comes to my mind first when I think about the unusual characteristics that starfish have. How, since there is no brain, how is it possible for the starfish to increase and decrease pressure in the right parts of the system in sequence that allows that creeping motion to occur and would allow then the starfish to move along? And really, there's no good answer to that question. It does have a digestive system, as we have talked about. Usually it is complete meaning that there is an opening, there are the equivalent of the intestine, the stomach, etc. So that portion is complete in most cases. There is also a body cavity, which is here. And if you may recall, a long time ago, we were talking about starting with the protozoans and then the sponges and the jellyfish and so on. And there are simpler organisms don't have a body cavity. One of the requirements, one of the necessary requirements for a body cavity is that there be three germ layers. So when you're talking about organisms that don't have three germ layers, there's no body cavity. And the starfish then does have that. From other viewpoints, there might be a desire to place this phylum of organisms somewhere lower in the list of the invertebrate phyla. Most textbooks, as I recall, usually put it last. They consider it to be the most complicated of the invertebrate animals, even more complicated than arthropods, simply because of the complexity of some of the systems that are found in the starfish. Now, this is not written in stone anyplace, and I'm sure there are some invertebrate zoologists that would look on starfish, would put them before arthropods. That's not something that's either here nor there, simply a notion that would depend on a person's viewpoint. But it is still interesting that in some respects it's very simple. It doesn't have a brain. Now, you go back to find the next animal down the way that doesn't have brains, and you're way down the line of the invertebrate phyla. But because of all the technical structures, the water vascular system and so on, it is put rather high in the list of organisms. Now, respiration, and that may seem to be a peculiar term to use for an underwater organism, but organisms that live in the water also must have oxygen. And the oxygen has to be absorbed from the ocean water itself. Now, apparently some of that can occur through the tube feet. But there are also structures that are known as dermal branchiae. Dermal, again, meaning skin. So in the skin, there are little structures that you will see sticking up that would appear as little jelly-like masses that serve as gills. These are the structures that actually allow the absorption of water, of oxygen from the seawater into the organism itself. And since there are no excretory structures in the starfish, it is very likely that these are also the organs where carbon dioxide would be excreted from the body. So that those two structures, the tube feet and the dermal branchiae, are probably the basis of the respiration that occurs. And respiration here simply has to do with the absorption of oxygen out of the water. There are lots of organisms that never have to come out of the water, but they still are dependent on oxygen. So there's got to be some kind of structure there that allows them to do this, fish, for example. And in that case, it is gills, which are able to extract oxygen from the ocean water itself. And the starfish certainly have that ability as well. Now, I mentioned the absence of the excretory organs, and to me that is interesting. If you have metabolism occurring, where you have food material being broken down, proteins, carbohydrates, lipids, there are going to be waste products from that, probably some indigestible parts usually, not in the case of the starfish, because all they're going to digest is the actual body of the shellfish itself. So there aren't any equivalent of bones or whatever. So that there's not a lot of detritus, indigestible material that the starfish is going to take into its body. But there's still a variety of chemicals. And where you have a metabolism that is in the process of breaking down proteins and carbohydrates and lipids, this requires some rather complicated chemistry. And it occurs in the starfish without the necessity for any kind of an excretory system. And most organisms, even reasonably simple ones, will have some kind of an excretory system, particularly for the protein wastes. But in the starfish, they get along nicely without that. They are usually referred to as free swimming. I think the swimming is perhaps a little picturesque. I suspect they crawl more than they swim, but at least they do have that. The term autotomy, T-O-M, means to cut. And on occasion, apparently, particularly with the brittle stars, they will simply turn loose of an arm. We haven't talked about the characteristic that separates starfish from the brittle stars, but it has to do with the attachment to the central disc. In the case of the starfish, that attachment is very broad-based. The tip of the ambulacra, the arm, is much smaller than the base of attachment to the central disc. And certainly with the brittle stars, sometimes they just turn loose of their legs. And they, again, have the ability to regenerate them much more slowly. Now, what we have seen here, then, with the starfish are a collection of unbelievably interesting and unique characteristics found in one organism. And it is a problem for the evolutionists to try and find some imaginary organism that these things could have come from. The problem really is that it would require more than one. It would have to have come from several common ancestors. And the idea is simply nonsensical. And our argument is that this is a good example of an organism that was created by an intelligent creator, not evolved over millions and billions of years.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson @bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.